This is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of September. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier. Here's what we got for you this week. For Hispanic Heritage Month, a look at the similarities between Spanish and Arabic.
Aceite.
Oil.
Zeyt.
Similar spelling and pronunciation.
Guitarra.
Guitar.
We say guitar.
A closer look at the city's plan to fix Austin's aging public cemeteries.
And so the master plan, one of the hard things we have to look at is, what is the standard of care that we're willing to accept?
And some of the best burgers in Austin.
They make this great tall burger with Dallas area 44 Farms brisket. They serve it on an easy tiger bun.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. But first, a friendly reminder to subscribe to this podcast. If you haven't already, you can do that at weekend.kut.org. You'll find links to the iTunes store. There's also RSS, Stitcher, and SoundCloud links. Feel free to leave us a review in the iTunes store. Definitely helps us out a lot, especially positive reviews. And if you have any questions or any comments about this podcast, shoot me an email. I'm nathan@kut.org. That's my email address. And I'm on Twitter, @KUTNathan. So, President Obama has invited to the White House a 14-year-old Muslim boy from North Texas. His name is Ahmed Mohammed. And he was suspended from school this week for bringing a homemade alarm clock that some teachers thought looked like a bomb. So Irving police were called in. They arrested him. He's a freshman at MacArthur High School. There was this huge backlash. And Ahmed says he's received an overwhelming amount of support online.
I felt pretty down that no one would know about this, but I guess it's all the supporters online and social media. It made me really happy to see all these people support me and support others.
Irving police say they're not going to press any charges. Ahmed says he's looking at transferring to a new school. And meanwhile, the governor is weighing in on this. Greg Abbott was at a restaurant in Dallas, and he said, quote, "The last thing we want to do is put handcuffs on a kid unjustifiably." And then he went on to add, "It looks like commitment to law enforcement may have gone too far." South by Southwest says the 2015 edition of the festival back in March created an economic benefit to the city of more than $317 million. That's not just direct spending, but that's indirect spending as well. So if I buy something from you for South by Southwest and you work at a business and then you use that money to go buy something else, that would count. Now, as KUT's Veronica Zaragovia reports from City Hall, this was the highest number ever, even though there was an effort to scale back some of the events.
Attendees at the 2015 South by Southwest Festival stayed an average of 5 nights in Austin, which is the largest average that Austin has seen in the history of this nearly 30-year festival. We have more hotel rooms in Austin. Hotel rates were particularly high this 2015 festival, so that helped generate a lot of the $317.2 million that came out of the festival in 2015. All in all, 2015 was the most successful South by Southwest that Austin has seen so far. I'm Veronica Zaragovia, KUT News.
Have you noticed the price of gas lately? It's been going down. It's selling for under $2 a gallon at some places in Austin, according to the site gasbuddy.com. And energy analyst Tom Cloza, he's with the Oil Price Information Service, he expects gas prices to go down even more.
Gasoline prices were really too high in the end of the summer, given where crude oil prices were. We're in that transition phase now where the glut of crude oil kind of gets transferred into a glut of gasoline. So you may see gasoline prices continue to drift lower, even if you hear that crude oil prices have recovered.
AAA Texas says the average price for regular unleaded in Austin is around $2.15 right now. Austin's Alamo Drafthouse says it's canceling a helicopter hog hunt it had planned during Fantastic Fest, which is happening later this month. This was after a bunch of people signed a petition. More than 1,200 people signed a petition on change.org asking for the Drafthouse to cancel this event where people would have an opportunity to shoot feral hogs from a helicopter. The founder of the Drafthouse, Tim Leake, says they like to play up Texan stereotypes at Fantastic Fest. He says they do it every year, but he acknowledges that the tone of their language promoting this event was, he said, quote, "undeniably wrong." So He still wants to debate this, though. He's going to hold a debate about the merits of shooting feral hogs from helicopters during Fantastic Fest. Texas has more than 2 million feral hogs, and they cause an estimated $500 million in property damage every year. Fans of the Tejano music legend Selena got a big treat this week, the chance to listen to a new song more than 20 years after she died. KUT's Mose Bushell has that story.
Diana Padilla loves Selena so much, she helped organize a Selena sing-along earlier this year. Now, they've got a new song to learn.
It'll definitely be another song to do as a finale, since it's a brand new song. Everybody's super excited about it.
She's talking about this. A tune called Oh No, I'll Never Fall in Love Again. Selena's family said they recently found a rough recording of the song and decided to release it to fans. Padilla says the track, recorded in English, captures a moment in the singer's career where she was going for crossover success in American pop.
It channels a whole different side of her that, you know, people who weren't fans of Selena before, they listen to this and they're like, oh, wow, this is like completely different. Who is that? And it's like, it's Selena.
It's just one way that fans and marketers are keeping the singer's memory alive. Plans for a Selena cosmetics collection are in the works. Selena's family also recently partnered with a Nevada-based tech company to create a sort of digital hologram of the singer that will release new songs and performances. Mose Bushell, KUT News.
It is Hispanic Heritage Month, a heritage that runs very deep in Texas. So deep that the original contracts of the first Anglo-American settlers who came to what would be called the state of Texas were all handwritten in Spanish. KUT's Joy Diaz is a native Spanish speaker, and she was kind of surprised to learn about the connections between Spanish and other languages.
Spanish is a Romance language, but it's much more than that. Rehab Masif was my daughter's preschool teacher in Austin. Masif is from Lebanon. As a little girl, Camila, my daughter, spoke mostly in Spanish, and Masif remembers a day when Camila was frustrated because she couldn't remember a word in English.
She was telling me about her camis.
Camisa is the word in Spanish for shirt, and Masif understood it perfectly because camis means the same thing in Arabic.
And I was like, oh, there's some words related, you know, to the Arabic.
To see just how many, Masif and I did an exercise. I'd say a word in Spanish, and she'd say it back in Arabic.
Aceite.
Oil.
Zeit.
Similar spelling and pronunciation.
Guitarra.
Guitar.
We say guitar. Guitar.
Now yeah. That I'm aware, it seems like I hear Arabic words everywhere. Take, for instance, one of my favorite songs by Latin Grammy winner Juan Luis Guerra. Ojalá que llueva café is peppered with words like café, coffee, and ojalá, God willing. Both come from Arabic. Or take late salsa singer Celia Cruz's catchword, azúcar, or sugar, another Arabic word. Linguist Victor Solís Parejo from the University of Barcelona in Spain says part of the language Spanish speakers use is the legacy of the influence of the Moors. That's the Arabic-speaking group from North Africa that invaded what would become Spain back in the 8th century. Their influence lasted about 700 years and is still visible today.
Especially if you travel south Spain, for example, in Merida, in the city where I was born, we have the Alcazaba Arabe, which is an Arabic fortification. So you can see that in the cities nowadays, but you also can see that Islamic presence, that Arabic presence in the language.
And of course, that presence traveled to the Americas when the Spaniards came here. About 4,000 Spanish words are believed to come directly from Arabic. That's why Maria Gutierrez, a Mexican aid worker with a nonprofit in Jordan, says she carries with her a small notebook wherever she goes.
Yeah, I'm trying to track all those words. It's like, oh, one more word. Like, at least every day I will find a word like, oh, it's exactly the same in Spanish. Oh, it's very close to Spanish.
The sooner Gutierrez masters the language, the sooner she'll be effective with her aid work. And right now, being able to speak Spanish is giving her a shortcut. But why should this merger of Spanish and Arabic matter to Texans? The two most spoken languages in Texas are English and Spanish. So what could happen to these languages as time goes by? Linguist Solís Parejo.
I believe that languages are alive.
As such, languages adapt and adopt and borrow words from each other, especially languages that live in close proximity.
I still remember when I first came to Texas, and, you know, I went to this restaurant with my wife, and the waiter asked us, do you want to have dinner inside or you want to go to the patio? I've never heard that word before in English, right? And it was like, where? Yeah, sir, outside. And I say, oh, en el patio. Yeah, let's go to the patio.
Patio is a Spanish word. If the influence exists to the point that we often joke about the existence of Spanglish, imagine what Texans will be speaking in, say, 100 or 200 years. The Instituto Cervantes of Harvard University estimates that by 2050, there will be 130 million Spanish speakers in the U.S., effectively making the U.S. the largest Spanish-speaking country in the world. Joy Diaz, KUT News.
The military exercise known as Jade Helm 15 arrived with a bang in Central Texas, and now it has quietly ended. Jade Helm was an 8-week exercise, generated a lot of paranoia, fueled by conspiracy theorists and amplified by social media and email forwards. So it began July 15th in Texas and 6 other states. The speculation was that it was a precursor to martial law. Texas Governor Greg Abbott added fuel to the fire when he said he would have the Texas State Guard monitor the exercises to make sure Texans' rights were not being violated, prompting ridicule all over late-night television.
Texas, there's no Texas takeover. The United States government already controls Texas. Since like the 1840s. And then he left and he came back and just borrow a textbook from a neighboring state. It's all in there.
That was The Daily Show's Jon Stewart when he was still hosting the show. I spoke with Bastrop Mayor Ken Kesselis. So how do you feel, sir, now that Jade Helm 15 is over?
I'll have to tell you, I don't even know if they were actually here.
What do you mean?
I mean, there was, as far as I know, there's no evidence that they were ever in the county. No one I've talked to has seen anything. I've never heard anything. They didn't cause any disruption. If they were here, we're not even aware of it. I mean, that's how low-keyed and uneventful the whole thing was.
Part of the mission was to blend in with the local population. Maybe they just did a really good job.
Maybe so. They sure didn't bother anybody. I hope they spent a lot of money.
They may not have bothered anybody, but some people were certainly bothered by the exercise.
Yeah, I think they were bothered. Yeah, I guess you're right. There were some people. I don't know any of them, but there were some.
How did you feel about the national coverage of the paranoia around Jade Helm 15?
Well, I think my only negative view of it is if people actually thought that there were significant number of people in our community that were worried about this, then I would be offended and upset that anybody made that conclusion from our little town, because the number of people that are residents who might have been upset has to be extraordinarily small. If there's any, you know, if people think that we're a bunch of people that, you know, buy into conspiracy theories and we're really upset about this or didn't want them coming, that kind of stuff, it's a false impression. I would hate that anybody in Austin or across the country, you know, came up with that impression.
You're saying it was a very small minority, and some of those people may not even be Bastrop residents?
I think a lot of them were not Bastropians, and I think that some people, and I guess there were some people that lived in the county or in our town, very, very, very small number of them that had any concern whatsoever. I mean, most everybody was having fun just watching the reporters and wonder what in the world they were doing here and saying things like I did. There's the story is there's no story. And we just went on business as usual.
And now the Jade Helm 15 exercise is over, and I guess life continues as normal.
Well, it continues as it did while the exercises were going on, just like it always has. You couldn't prove by me that there were any exercises. I trust the government that they had the exercises. I hope they were very effective and helpful for what their mission is, but I'm not aware they were here.
Ken Kesslis is the mayor of Bastrop. I spoke to him via FaceTime. This week, the Austin City Council voted to approve the city's historic cemetery's master plan. This is a massive document. It's more than 500 pages. And it basically lays out a future for the city's five publicly owned burial grounds. It includes suggestions on how to preserve cemeteries, how to document cemeteries, and how to pay for all that. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that three out of the five public cemeteries in Austin, three of them are full. So they're no longer selling plots. As KUT's Audrey McGlinchey reports, the business of owning a cemetery can be quite tricky.
I'm standing in Austin's oldest burial ground, Oakwood Cemetery, on the east side at 16th and Kamal. Dale Flatt, a retired Austin firefighter, asked me a question.
When's the last time you visited your grandparents' grave?
Christmas, 2008. It was maybe the second time I'd been to the cemetery outside Philadelphia, where they're buried. Flatt says these days, most people answer that question with never, or once or twice. He runs Save Austin Cemeteries, a nonprofit aimed at preserving the city's burial grounds. We stop at the grave of Peter J. Lawless, a Texas railroad man who lived for a while in the Driscoll Hotel.
And this is his wife next to him.
Now she looks a little toppled over. What's going on there?
She is, and that's part of the problem we have with an old cemetery like this that has stones is either through vandalism or occasionally by mistake, a lawnmower may back into something and knock it over. And so that's the big dynamic with older cemeteries.
According to state law, a city can only repair or replace a gravestone if it's likely to cause injury to a visitor. Otherwise, family members are responsible. So in order to preserve a monument that might be cracked, but not dangerous, the city needs to have the family's permission. And in most cases, their money. Oakwood is an old cemetery, so you'd most likely have to call up someone's great-great-grandson.
Hey, listen, your great-great-grandfather's headstone is endangering of toppling over. It's going to cost $2,000. You're going to go, I got student loans, I got wife, kids, car payments, house payments. It's not going to happen.
Like most of the others, Oakwood Cemetery is full. No burial plots for sale. And it's been full for roughly a century. That's a big revenue drain for the city. No money coming in, and lots of money going out for maintenance. The cemeteries where you can still buy plots, Austin Memorial Cemetery on Hancock Drive and Evergreen Cemetery off Airport Boulevard, sell them for anywhere from $1,800 to $2,600. The actual burial will cost you an additional $1,200. But eventually, these cemeteries will fill up as well. Flatt and I stand outside a large mausoleum, the top of it browning, the metal gate to the tomb rusted. The name on the outside is Chrisley.
I'm famous for this quote. It's not mine, but I stole it. The cemetery is the only piece of property you sell once, but you have to maintain it forever. And so the master plan, one of the hard things we have to look at is, what is the standard of care that we're willing to accept?
That's one of the things the city's proposed Historic Cemeteries Master Plan tries to tackle.
Cities throughout the country are struggling with issues surrounding historic cemeteries.
Kim McKnight is a program coordinator with Austin's Parks and Recreation Department. She was the lead on the Historic Cemeteries Master Plan. In April, McKnight began introducing several of the city's boards and commissions to the master plan. Here she is presenting to the Environmental Board in June.
The American population is increasingly mobile and less likely to remain rooted in the same community for generations. Fewer family members may remain near the cemeteries where their parents, grandparents, and ancestors are buried.
Cremation is also becoming more common, she says.
As a result, many of the nation's oldest cemeteries, both public and privately owned, have been largely abandoned by the communities they once served.
In 2013, these and other issues facing Austin cemeteries came to a head. The drought of 2011 had destroyed much of the cemetery's living population, its vegetation. A contract the city had with a longtime cemetery management company was about to end, so Austin decided it would manage the cemeteries itself. At the same time, staff put together a working group to begin thinking about what the cemetery should look like going forward. That led to the master plan. Some of its recommendations are as simple as replacing a fence. Here's Kim McKnight again.
Currently at Oakwood Cemetery, we have chain link fencing topped with barbed wire. And this is our oldest municipal historic cemetery. It's just not a very respectful type of fencing, quite frankly.
But others recommend the city collect more revenue by offering alternative burial options. Ideas include setting up scatter gardens, green spaces where family members can legally scatter the ashes of their loved ones. Another idea is to build columbariums, places where families can buy a small storage space for their loved one's urn. It's important to point out that no funding has yet been secured for these ideas. Council will simply put its stamp of approval on the master plan, okaying a set of priorities. The funding comes later. The master plan is a whole lot of paper, 500 pages of it. But when you go into the cemeteries, especially those newer ones, you get a sense of what's at stake. Sandra Kirk is a former planning commissioner with the city. She's also the daughter of Willie Mae Kirk, a local civil rights leader. She drives me around Evergreen Cemetery, and we talk about how it needs a permanent restroom, a second entrance. Then we spot someone she knows.
These two Kirk stones are family stones for me. That's my mother, who died September 2013, and that's my brother. This is, I usually come and just kind of check and sometimes put flowers and what have you.
Kirk points out Mrs. Calhoun across the way, her mother's neighbor in life and now in death. Then there's the mom of her childhood best friend, Mrs. Bailey. She's also buried here in Evergreen.
Just so many memories, and it's a real heart opener for me being in Evergreen, but that's just the way I see it.
The city of Austin is growing fast, soon to reach 1 million residents. There are endless conversations about how the city should look and function for new and current residents. The city's cemeteries house about 60,000 people and get only a handful of new ones every year. People like Kim McKnight and Dale Flatt are simply asking, why not talk about what their home will look like? Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
We have been talking in this podcast about how the Austin School Board is going to appoint someone to fill a vacant seat. Southwest Austin, it's actually the largest district in AISD. And two people applied. So Austin ISD is holding public forums with these candidates. KUT's Kate McGee went to one of those meetings.
Yasmin Wagner and Jonathan Sump fielded questions about the issues facing Austin schools and the schools in District 7. School funding, overcrowding, possible changes to attendance zones, and equity. The two candidates agreed on most issues, including the area's biggest concern, buying land for a South Austin high school. The district has bond money from 2008 to buy land, but nothing's been purchased, and residents are frustrated. The candidates agreed.
But I think the most critical thing to me is that we don't just look at the 2008 bond as the silver bullet answer to everything. There's still work that needs to be done.
That's Yasmin Wagner. She ran against the late trustee Robert Schneider and received 48% of the vote last year. The other candidate, Jonathan Sump, also said the land won't resolve all the area's problems.
So we need to think further, because we can get land, but that's not building a school. We're going to have another bond referendum so that we can build a school.
The district will hold a final forum at Baranoff Elementary School Saturday at 11 a.m. The board will appoint the replacement trustee by the end of the month. Kate McGee, KUT News.
Texas broadcaster Milo Hamilton died this week. His career spanned more than six decades, including his final job, which was doing play-by-play for the Houston Astros. KUT's Ben Philpott is a huge baseball fan, and he filed this story.
Hamilton spent 27 years calling games for the Houston Ball Club. It was his voice that announced Mike Scott's no-hitter to clinch the National League West Division title in 1986. He called Craig Biggio's 3,000th hit and Nolan Ryan's 4,000th strikeout. But he may be best known for being the voice of one of baseball's greatest moments, when Hank Aaron passed Babe Ruth for the all-time home run record.
Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7-15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
Houston Astros President Reed Ryan released a statement this afternoon on Hamilton's death, saying, quote, "Today, the entire Astros family and many throughout the baseball world are mourning the loss of our friend." Ben Philpott, KUT News.
So before the big Republican debate on CNN this week, Donald Trump took his show to Texas, specifically the American Airlines Center in Dallas, which has a capacity of about 20,000. So the event brought fans, it attracted enemies, and some people who just wanted to see this celebrity candidate for themselves in person. Christopher Connolly has this report.
The campaign gave away 20,000 tickets. There were folks scattered throughout the nosebleeds, but the arena wasn't entirely full. Much of the crowd was white, conservative, and independently minded. People like the Yeagers of Fairview.
It's getting back to the people.
You'll be in, do it, get it done, and get out.
Dan and Eileen say they trust Trump. He's rich enough to be independent, and he understands what regular folks need.
I think it's a fresh approach.
Two Ziegenbachs, please.
Before the rally got started, Von Thompson was buying beers at a busy concession stand. He came with a friend, and he just wanted to see Donald Trump be Donald Trump.
This rally is going to be much better with alcohol.
Trump was late coming in. It was rush hour in Dallas. But once the warm-up acts got started and the Pledge of Allegiance recited, it was clear that this was a crowd that was ready to be revved.
The next president of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
The Donald delivered. It was a long, winding speech. He spoke for more than an hour. No teleprompters, he said, just some notes. Mostly, it was bread and butter. Bash the Republican establishment. Folks like strategist Karl Rove.
No, he's terrible. He's terrible. He's terrible.
Crack a joke about his looks.
By the way, can you see in the back? They have the best view. Can you see it's really my hair?
And, of course, talk about his wealth.
I made $213 million. Can you believe it? From a television show.
Then Trump delved into more substantive issues. Support for veterans, putting tough-minded negotiators at the table with the likes of Iran, repealing and replacing Obamacare with something much, much better. The biggest applause, though, came from his unrelenting approach to immigration. He called the United States a dumping ground for the rest of the world.
We have to build a wall, folks. We have to build a wall.
The fervor inside was matched only by the 1,000 or so anti-Trump activists outside. The League of United Latin American Citizens organized a Dump the Trump rally and marched through part of downtown holding signs and piñatas in the form of the billionaire's head.
Join with us, stand up to that boy and tell him we're not going to take that anymore.
Activist Hadi Jawad says Trump and his supporters should stop bashing immigrants.
This politics of division and spewing hatred against setting neighbor against neighbor is not really the way to go forward. It's not about what America is about, and these are not our values as Americans.
In one night, two rallies with two takes on American values.
That's Christopher Connolly with Dallas Public Radio Station, KERA. Here in the heart of Burgertown, USA, there's no shortage of options. There's just too many to decide. So let's narrow it down a bit. Austin American statesman restaurant critic Matthew Odom just came out with his 15 favorite burgers in Austin, and he's here with us now. Hi, Matthew.
Hey there, Nathan.
So what makes for a good hamburger in your view? And there's more than one type of good hamburger, I guess.
Well, you know, some people like a thinner patty. Some people like a thick, coarse ground patty. You want it to be juicy. You need to have balance, of course, between meat and bread. You don't want to have too much of one or the other. You need some nice tang, whether that's aioli or a kind of mustard. You need to have some crunch from pickles and onions. Your vegetables need to be fresh. So there's a lot going on there, and it's got to be perfectly cooked, of course.
Well, let's get right down to it then. You got 15. Give us a few.
I'll give you a few. One is Black Star Co-op, which is the cooperative up there in North Austin near the Crestview rail station. They make this great tall burger with Dallas area 44 Farms brisket. They serve it on an Easy Tiger bun. And what's great there is their mustard. It uses their own high esteem American pale ale, which kind of enlivens this grainy house-made mustard. They've got really fresh bib lettuce and a blood red slice of tomato. It's a really thick, nice burger. You've also got other places that aren't really known for burgers. Clark's. It's the oyster bar seafood place there on West 6th Street. They take their kind of fatty ground shuck and they saute it in a pan and then finish it in their deck oven. It gets this nice blanket of melted Gruyere cheese, and they do this tangy sauce that's mayonnaise blended with hard-boiled egg and capers and pickles and herbs. It's a great, unique condiment for the burger, and it's also pretty good for dipping their haystack french fries in.
All right. So not everywhere on this list is a traditional restaurant necessarily.
That's right. I've got a trailer on there, which would be Luke's Inside Out, which is outside of the Gibson Bar there. They make their own love sauce, they call it, which is, I think it's a mixture of mayonnaise, ketchup, barbecue sauce. So you've got some smokiness and tang there. They have melted cheddar cheese on that. That's a really great burger. And then Hopfields here right near campus, it's more traditionally thought of as a bar or a pub. They have a bunch of great beer, but they ended up number two on my list. I love their burger. They have a bun from Slow Dough Bread Company out of Houston. They put camembert cheese on it, which pays homage to their French roots there as a restaurant. And they have crunchy cornichon pickles, caramelized onions, and whole grain mustard. It's just kind of gooey and juicy and really wonderful.
Well, you got to tell us what your number one is.
My number one burger is from Odd Duck there on South Lamar across from the Alamo Draft House. You know, not surprisingly, Odd Duck, of course, uses exceptional ingredients and thoughtful craftsmanship like they do with everything there and also at their sister restaurant, Barley Swine, down the street. And they change up their burger, which they only offer at lunch. The last time I had it, it was served on a sesame seed dotted, soft, fluffy potato bun. They had house-made green chili mayo, which gave it a creaminess and piquancy. And then they made their own bacon pimento cheese, which is divine. And instead of lettuce, they have fresh arugula on there, which gives you a bitter, peppery snap. And then also these thick heirloom tomatoes. And they go the extra mile. The last time I had it, the onions were soaked in beet juice, which gives a slight earthiness and tanginess and that little garden flair to the gooey, beefy crumble there. It's a heck of a burger.
Creative. Now, a lot of these burgers are getting in the double-digit range, but you wrote about some of your other favorites not on this top 15 that are at a different price point.
Well, you know, $6 or less. Those include Dan's Hamburgers, which has several locations in the Austin area. Nice, fatty. They put mayonnaise on there, which I really like. Those white onions, just fierce, nice crunch to it. P. Terry's as well. Obviously, you see them all around town. You know, I'll take P. Terry's over any of those national competitors that have been coming into town lately. And there's four others, so you'll have to pick up the story to check that out.
Okay, but you did think of the vegetarians.
My favorite veggie burger in town is from Bolden Creek Cafe in South Austin. People wonder, when you want a veggie burger, do you want it to replicate a hamburger? Does it need to taste like meat? You know, I don't care about any of those things. I just looked at this on their own merits. And they've got this grain burger. It's got a little bit of spice to it. And it's bound by peanut butter, I believe. Good luck getting the recipe out of them. They keep that a close secret. And then they have a couple different sauces, I believe. There's a chipotle walnut pesto. And then my favorite is this tangy, kind of citrusy barbecue sauce that I just love. And when I want a veggie burger, I head over to Bolden Creek.
Okay. Well, you can check out Matthew Odom's list of his favorite 15 burgers in the city and watch a video of that number one Odd Duck burger being made. It's all at Austin360.com. Matthew Odom, restaurant critic for The Statesman, thank you for coming by again.
Always a pleasure, Nathan.
my friends, is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of September. Thank you again for listening. Remember, you can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org. If you have any questions or comments, email me, nathan@kut.org. Our theme music is by RAC. Thanks again for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. And then,